Good afternoon, Wrangell. It's 1 p.m. You're listening to Talk on the Rock, your local live community call-in show. I'm Sage Smiley, local news reporter and host. Today's guest is Julie Decker, Executive Director of the Alaska Fisheries Development Foundation and Chair of the Alaska Mariculture Task Force. Welcome. Thank you so much for being with me today.
Yeah, great to be here.
I'm really excited to have you here and to talk about mariculture. It's something that I've been trying to learn a lot about, but it's pretty complicated, and so excited of an expert here like you to talk about it. If anyone wants to call in, you can call 874-2345 to ask a question or say hi. Cindy's over in the other studio and can take those calls. So first up, kind of what is mariculture? If you had to broadly explain, what is mariculture, and is there a definition specific to Alaska? Are there parts of mariculture that just don't come here, basically?
Yeah, so very broadly, mariculture just is growing things in salt water. But in Alaska, what we have used the term to mean is growing either shellfish or seaweed, and growing it either through enhancement, restoration, or aquatic farming. And so those are the types of things and activities that we're kind of mean when we talk about mariculture. And one thing that's important to point out is that in Alaska, salmon farming or finfish farming is prohibited by state law. So that is not what we're talking about.
Not farmed fish.
Correct.
But farmed kelp, oysters, things like that, right?
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
So then how does that work? How do mariculture farms, I think, if I understand correctly, there are kind of two types, which is like a static farm where they're just the kelp or the oysters are raised in the same place the entire time. But then there's also going through the legislature, the idea that we might be able to enhance wild stocks and kind of put them out into the wild. So how does mariculture work?
Yeah, that's an important differentiation, and it's a little bit confusing, but yes, aquatic farming is a process where someone, like an individual or a company, gets a lease from the state Department of Natural Resources, and the lease is for 10 years, and they can, in that space that lease applies to, they can grow, you know, shellfish, seaweed, things like that. They also have to get a permit from Fish and Game to make sure that the species are all, you know, proper and all that sort of thing. So Fish and Game's permitting sort of is around the actual animals or plants, and DNR is around the land or the water. So, but the other activities like enhancement or restoration, they're really done in the wild. And it's more akin to the enhancement legislation that's going through the process, and it's almost done. But cross my fingers when I say that, because we have like 8 days left or something like that.
And it's been years of work.
It's been years of work, right. But the legislation that's working its way through the process is modeled after our salmon enhancement program. So basically, it would allow for similar types of activities that we do with salmon enhancement, like with hatcheries, and where you raise sort of the little ones or the babies in a hatchery setting and then release them into the wild. But it would allow for things like that, activities like that around king crab or gooey duck or sea cucumber or abalone or razor clams, that kind of thing. There's a lot of research and development that will have to take place to allow this and to sort of allow it on a larger scale. Fish and Game is pretty cautious about those things. But they've done some sort of experimental level activities with king crab and sea cucumbers. And so in order to basically gradually increase those levels, we needed this legislation in place that gives like Fish and Game the authority and the ability to manage that.
Mm-hmm. So maybe backtracking slightly, what does mariculture in Alaska look like right now? Like, is it super widespread, or is it this kind of like a baby thing?
It's very much at a sort of an infancy level as far as an industry.
Yes.
So right now, shellfish enhancement, you know, isn't even allowed legally, right? So it's just been very much an experimental level. But aquatic farming has been allowed since 1988. But it's, you know, there's been, let's say, roughly 50 to 60 primarily oyster farm permits and leases around the state since 1988. In fact, there was even oysters grown, I believe, in Wrangell before statehood. So it's something that's been around for a while. It's just never kind of gotten to scale. It's been more of a mom and pop level thing. There are a few of the oyster farmers, existing oyster farmers, that are starting to sort of build scale and starting to add pieces of like infrastructure to their farms that will allow an expansion of the industry, like flupsies, or they're sort of like the middle stage of growing an oyster. And before you put it out in the farm, you grow it in these flupsies or nurseries that really flood them with more water and or the nutrients that they eat. I'm not even sure if eat's the right word, but
absorb.
Yes, consume, whatever, that make them grow. And so they grow faster that way.
Uh-huh.
So the industry is beginning to see some change as far as scale. There's some folks in Southeast even that are doing some interesting kind of co-industry development with tourism. So there's a company called Hump Island Oysters out of Ketchikan, and they started an oyster farm maybe 10 years ago or so, and they've slowly been expanding. They add some seaweed, and then they decided to start pairing up with a tourism component, and so they built a floating oyster bar at their farm, and they've been taking, you know, like smaller vessels of tourists out to their farm. Now, of course, 2020 kind of did that one in for a little while, but they hope to get back to that pairing of both tourism and mariculture together, and is another way to help build out their farm. And it's actually a really cool thing, because typically a lot of times not only the public, but many people don't see those two industries as coexisting. Like, oh, if I'm going to bring a farm, or if I'm going to bring tourists to this bay, it has to be pristine and nothing there. And here's an instance where someone's, you know, farming, and they're bringing tourists specifically to see the farm. And the tourists think that that's cool. And it's a fun, different activity. They get to not only see it, but then they get to taste it, you know, and then they get to learn about it. They get to learn about what makes Alaska special and how our natural resources are really well and sustainably managed. And so all of those things really help provide a good public image. So it's a very good thing, I think, in the long term. And we may see more of it, you know, in the future.
So in terms of the development then, growing it, if I understand correctly, Governor Walker put together the Alaska Mariculture Task Force. So I want to talk a bit about that, like kind of what the idea behind that is, how it's developed, like what's been done so far. And I'm sure there's still tons to do, as evidenced by the fact that there's legislation we're trying to make sure gets through in the next few days. So what is the Alaska Mariculture Task Force?
Yeah, so in 2016, Governor Walker, through an administrative order, he created the Mariculture Task Force and appointed like 11 people to the task force. And our sort of initial task was to create this statewide comprehensive plan of how to actually do this, right? How do you go about building a new industry statewide and try to do it in the most efficient way possible, since this is kind of the industry, you know, aquatic farming anyway piece of it has been around since 1988, and it's roughly been between $500,000 to $1.5 million a year industry. Well, we'd like to expand that, but how do you do that sort of expeditiously, and recognizing like the state at the time and even now has had very limited dollars, right? So it's not like you can just throw money at it. So you have to go about the development in a very efficient way. So cooperation is a real big part of all of that. So there are 11 members on the task force. One is the commissioner of the Department of Fish and Game. One's from Department of Commerce. And then the director of Alaska Sea Grant, and the university has a position. And then other than that, the rest of the task force members are sort of members of the public, representing different sort of sectors or whatever, or interest groups within the public, including hatchery organizations, fishermen, aquatic farmers, things like CDQ group or community development quota groups from out in Western Alaska. So really a broad group of interests. So we finished the comprehensive plan in 2018, and it doesn't sound like fun, glamorous work, and it's not really.
That sounds so glamorous. What are you talking
about?
Yeah,
I know, right? Really sexy. So we try to at least put pictures in that are in the comprehensive plan that are sexy.
The pictures are beautiful. I enjoy the sexy kelp photos.
Sexy seaweed is what we call it, yeah. Sexy seaweed pictures to draw people into.
Definitely.
Our very dry documents. it was really good work that was done, because we drew in, we recognized those 11 people didn't have all the expertise and knowledge required to really do this a proper job. So we pulled in people from around the state and from even other regions in the U.S. To kind of help. And we created little, I think they were called advisory committees at the time, or work groups in our later version, to sort of look at distinct segments of the industry. So in 2018, we finished that. And the good part is as we were analyzing this, we did two versions of economic analysis, look at other parts of the world and how that could apply to Alaska, kind of what are common themes, what are Alaska's strengths, all those things. We started also working on what we came to know as the highest priority things that we needed to achieve. So it became this really great working group. And then in 2018, after we delivered the plan to the governor, he decided to extend the task force by a second administrative order and kind of extend our work. And the group will sunset this year on June 30th, 2021. And so we're kind of wrapping up our work and submitting our final report to Governor Dunleavy now. He has also been supportive, which is excellent. I mean, to span administrations and to receive support from multiple administrations is really, really a good sign of, like, you know, many people view this industry as a real positive for Alaskans.
So the group sunsets pretty soon then. So is there something in place to take over? Is there some idea of, like, what would take over for kind of an industry work group, or is that something that will just kind of peter off and, you know, be gone?
We thought it was really important to keep, you know, some coordination of the work going, and because we did see progress when we were all working together, right? And so we've created a nonprofit called the Alaska Mariculture Alliance, or AMA, or the Alliance, either way you want to call it. And that group, we're still sort of going out and getting new members for that initial group and board of directors. That will be happening in the next couple months before we sunset. And then membership will continue to grow from there. But that will really take up sort of the industry-led direction of growing mariculture in Alaska. And then there's also sort of a sister group or companion group called the Mariculture Research and Training Center. And it's not so much a group as one person within the Alaska Sea Grant agency that will help coordinate research projects, priorities, and then also, like, the results, sort of translating that back to industry so industry can actually adopt new techniques based on research that's been done in the state. And so we recognized there had been a long-term problem of prioritizing industry needs for research and then coordinating with the actual researchers who have the skills and abilities to make that stuff happen. And that's the point of that entity, the Mariculture Research and Training Center, and then also to do some training with folks that are interested
Definitely. That makes sense. So anyone tuning in, you're listening to Talk on the Rock with Julie Decker. We're talking about mariculture in the state and, you know, kind of what's happened, what's to come. Well, I guess we'll continue to talk about what's to come. You can call 874-2345 if you want to say hi or ask a question. My next question is, so, I mean, there's been aquatic farming in the state for a while, and we're the I say we as if I'm part of this. I'm just covering it as a journalist. But the legislature and the Alaska Mariculture Task Force have been working on getting legislation passed to allow for shellfish enhancement to bolster wild stocks. My question is, the goal of a $100 million industry in 20 years, how does that happen? Where is that money coming from? Like, where, for example, does kelp be sent? Like, where is kelp sent to become something? What does it become? Like, where are these products going to be going? Because things like maybe oysters, that's a little more obvious, like people eat oysters, but other products that could either be marketed under this new law or, you know, just growing that industry, where do these products go? Where is the anticipated funding coming from to make it into that $100 million industry?
Yeah, no, that's really good questions. So since we're talking about with mariculture that we're talking about either shellfish or seaweed species, right?
Mm-hmm.
Oysters is, I think, the one that most Alaskans recognize. I mean, our oysters are deliciously sweet, and I mean, they're amazing. I whenever I go somewhere, I always brag them up and ask for them because, like, if you're in the Gulf of Mexico, I mean, I don't want to, like,
say it.
I don't want to say anything negative about another region, but if you compare the two oysters side by side, there's a distinct difference. Let me just put it that way. And also part of the difference is that our oysters grow slower because it's colder waters. So anyway, but we have some excellent attributes of some of our shellfish. But seaweed is a relatively new thing for the state. There's been some, you know, small mom and pop companies have done some things like pickled kelp and kelp marmalades. And now in Juneau, Barnacle Foods has started to make a name for themselves making kelp salsa and kelp hot sauce. So those are some fun new products that are coming out, sort of food consumption products. There's a company called Blue Evolution based out of Kodiak right now, and they're making some kelp pastas.
Wow.
They are making a popcorn that has like kelp sprinkles on it. And, so some fun and innovative, you know, products really to connect with consumers. Primarily they're targeting American consumers right now, but connect with consumers on products that they're already used to eating, but just bring in Alaska kelp into them. And they're having some really pretty good success, particularly understanding the companies aren't large, you know, so they don't have huge marketing budgets and whatnot. But they are definitely seeing demand for their products. So that's a really good sign. And part of what we looked at in our sort of economic analysis about where could the industry go, what are the possibilities? When we look at things in Alaska and in coastal Alaska, which is, you know, usually pretty rural and remote, you know, costs are usually high, costs of production. And so to compensate for that, you can't really produce sort of low value products and compete with other people around the world. So, for instance, or other regions, for instance, China or, you know, there's a lot of places in Southeast Asia and Korea that produce sort of an economical, shall we say, dried kelp products. And so really to try to mimic that and then compete on price, that's not a winning strategy. So I think some of these smaller companies are doing in Alaska is actually really good. They've got the right sort of idea when they're thinking about the marketplace. And we have seen some other companies show interest. For instance, even Trident Seafoods, who has a plant here in Wrangell, they have applied for aquatic farm permits for seaweed. And they recently had their application in Kodiak was denied, but their application near Sandpoint was approved just literally in the last 2 weeks. And so they haven't developed it yet, but it shows that they're interest. They have interest. And they have told folks that one of the reasons why they're looking into this is that so many of their fishermen have asked them, like, we'd like to start a farm, but we don't have anyone to sell our seaweed to. You know, can you look at this industry and see if this is something that, you know, has value or something that would be good for you guys? And then maybe we can have a market, you know, similar to we sell you salmon. And so I think, you know, they're looking at things like at times when we have poor salmon seasons or whatnot, they definitely have, many processors in the state have excess capacity at their plants. And so what can you do to fill that capacity? And seaweed seasons are actually quite nice fit with salmon because you plant seaweed typically in the fall and harvest in the spring. And so that's really nice shoulder seasons for salmon, both for fishermen and processors. So that is a nice fit in a lot of ways as well. So I don't know if I'm getting back around to your question, but I think there's some companies from outside the state that are interested in Alaska as a potential place to source seaweed for what they call a biorefinery process, which is basically breaking down seaweed into its component products or pieces. And then one of those would be sort of the feedstock to make bioplastics. Mm-hmm. And so basically they're targeting the market that supplies food grade plastics that you could then unwrap your food and compost the plastic afterward. And they see a real need there and demand. And it's kind of one of those things that it's all multiple problems. You know, plastics in the oceans is a pretty big deal these days. And the reason plastics are in the ocean is because the recycling part is not, like, working. Mm-hmm. And China in 2018 stopped accepting, like, everybody's plastics from around the world. And so all of a sudden now plastics are in the ocean, like, at huge levels. And so that's a problem. So anyway, there's some different products that are possible out of seaweed that maybe we didn't necessarily think about in the past. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a lot of room for innovation still too, things that we don't even conceive of yet.
So then with all these, you know, positives, possible ways to go with mariculture development, are there big concerns? Are there, like, things that need to be worked through before this becomes a, and I know that some of this is up in the air or that, but are there, like, negatives, places for it to go wrong, things that maybe the task force is concerned about as things are going forward? Or is it more just a working through little problems as they come, or working through, you know, innovations as they come up as well?
Yeah, there's a whole, like, realm of sort of technical issues, just in, like we've said, chicken or egg kind of scenarios and how an industry grows.
Mm-hmm.
I think what I would say is that there are challenges around sort of any kind of public use of, private use of a public resource, such as farming, you know, in state waters.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, there may be some other user for that space. Typically, those things get worked out in the application process. DNR actually has, you know, legal requirements for both reaching out to agencies, state agencies and federal agencies, about do you see any problems with this, what is being planted in this site, you know, in particular and for these species. So they do that, and then after that, they do a 30-day public process where they accept comments from the public about that site. You know, are there others that use that site, you know? And they have, again, in law, aquatic farming is actually one of the lower priorities. So in other words, if someone else can document that they have used and do regularly use that site, and you can't mitigate, or in other words, those two activities can't coexist, the aquatic farm will be denied by the state.
Mm.
And there's instances under the Dunleavy administration where that has happened, one in Sitka with an oyster farm site, and then one, the Trident one in Kodiak. It was, pretty highly used site, or nearby site. Mm-hmm. So anyway, so some of those kinds of use issues are taken care of in the process. But I think that there's some general broader concerns around carrying capacity of bays, and you know, genetic concerns, and then also like I wouldn't quite call it limitations, but it's sort of equity in, you know, sort of large scale versus small scale, and what's the right fit and how does that work. So those are some of the challenges that we're pointing to in our final report to the governor, that like, look, these are some things that are on the horizon that need to be worked through. There's quite a bit of information out there that both shellfish and seaweed farming are beneficial to the environment, which is really a plus, but it's translating that information to the public. That's a very difficult task. And so public education is one of the things that we try to at least spend some time on, and bringing in sort of experts in different areas or scientists and stuff like that. So I think, you know, if as long as we go eyes wide open and we're trying as hard as we can to address all these different things that we recognize are potential hurdles or barriers, I think we'll be able to continue to move forward.
Mm-hmm. So in terms of, I mean, public education being one of the things, what are kind of the next steps for mariculture in Alaska? I feel like probably the very soonest one would be hoping that the HB 41 and SB 64 make their way through the legislature before the session ends. But what are kind of the next steps after that?
Yeah, the bills are actually, I mean, they've been around for a while, but they're, I don't know, you know, one of just a long list of things. So we've done quite a bit with training workshops for Alaskans. So the organization I work for, Alaska Fisheries Development Foundation, we received a grant from NOAA, and part of that went towards sponsoring these trainings last year and this year. And we had to take a turn and do them all virtually this year, of course. But we, through those 2 years, we've trained over 200 people in 2 to 2.5 day workshops. Plus additional beyond that, just like in 2-hour webinars. And then we pulled together a really great group of experts to talk about all the different parts of the industry, you know, in these trainings. So all those folks sort of have built, you know, PowerPoints and training materials, and we have them all housed in one spot on like a Google folder, and they are accessible to the public. And so we're making all those training materials accessible. It's a lot to kind of weed through without the workshop component, but mm-hmm. if people have the desire to, they are there. So trainings are really important. But really that's just a bare bones introduction. What we would really like to do is work with farmers to do some hands-on training at their sites. Boot camp kind of activity, you know, particularly with young Alaskans who just have some interests here. That way they actually get hands-on experience and they see if, does this actually fit me, you know, the work that I'll be doing, is that a fit for me? So we would like to do more in that area. There's quite a bit of research actually going on in different areas of the state. We are working to not only sort of just train Alaskans in general, train and educate, but to also reach out in particular to Alaska Natives. They are a big part of coastal Alaska that have the skills and abilities and many times the assets to do this stuff. So there are a number of, you know, individuals, tribes, village corporations, et cetera, that are interested. And so it's, you know, helping to try to connect those dots and work with folks on trainings and or bring them to their, like, to their community, that kind of thing. So There's so much to do. Oh my gosh, it's overwhelming. But it's fun. And I mean, a big part of it is unlocking the demand side, you know? So it's like bringing in processors or new companies that want to get into processing. Mm-hmm. So that's another part of the equation, I guess.
So if people want to get involved or learn more, where should they go? Who should they talk to? What site should they go to?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what is their next step in terms of being like, ooh, I want to either learn more or like maybe I want to apply to farm something. Maybe I want to do those sorts of things.
Yeah. So Alaska Sea Grant, they have quite a few resources online. And Alaska Fisheries Development Foundation, our webpage we have called the Alaska Mariculture Initiative. So it's got some resources there. It'll have a link to these training documents that we put together for the workshops as well. If you want to know about the task force, the Alaska Department of Fish and Game has a website dedicated or webpage dedicated to the Mariculture Task Force. And, you know, generally, if you just start Googling around, I mean, there's quite a bit of shellfish farming industry in Washington, the state of Washington. It's actually the largest in the U.S. for shellfish farming. So there's quite a bit of information through Pacific Coast States. Oh, stop. I got the acronym wrong. Pacific Coast Shellfish Growers Association. Mm-hmm. There we go. And Pacific Shellfish Institute. So those are some resources. And then there's like the Algae Foundation. They're based on the East Coast, but they have a lot of actually like educational materials as well.
It's a fun name.
Yeah, I know. Macroalgae is kelp, right? So it's a large form of algae. So they look at like micro and macro, but anyway.
So I guess maybe to wrap things up, what is your assessment of mariculture in this state? Where it stands, where it's going? Like, how do you feel about possibilities? Are you hopeful? Are you excited? I mean, it would be kind of sad if you were.
Yeah, right.
Considering you're the chair of this development.
Well, and there's I need to make a point of clarification. I was the chair. I'm not the chair anymore. Heather McCarty is the chair now.
Okay.
But that's just a small point. We work together very closely. But mm-hmm. So let's see here. I would say I'm very optimistic and excited. It's actually, you know, one of the parts of the job that's fun, you know, even though there's challenges, it just represents such an opportunity for Alaskans that's, you know, getting on the ground floor. It's really cool. Now, everyone needs to recognize, like, getting in on the ground floor sounds cool, and it is cool, but it's hard.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one thing that people need to understand, eyes wide open, is this stuff isn't just, like, off the shelf, like, oh, here's my little instruction booklet.
And plop an oyster in the ocean.
Yeah, plant some seaweed and walk away and it's good to go. Like, there are a lot of developmental challenges that go along with it, you know, something new. So, but that, I don't want that to deter people, but I think they just need to be realistic about that. And there might be slim years at the beginning as you're sort of developing a farm, learning what works, learning what doesn't work. And as we sort of also develop the other parts, like the processing and such, and new products, all that kind of thing. So there will be challenges, no doubt. But if folks are up for it or they're just like different things, you know, I would say, you know, take a look at it. There's an excellent book called Seaweeds of Alaska, mm-hmm. and it's kind of like the field guide book for species, but that's another important part. If you're gonna look at the seaweed part, is to be able to identify different species, mm-hmm. and so because you do have to collect like the parent plants that like produce your seed and blah blah blah. So you have to be able to identify seaweeds, and then you know, for folks that are actually kind of foodies, you know, this is also a really cool opportunity to like play with food and develop new products. And It is really fun to watch seaweed change kelp, you know, the brown kelps. Mm-hmm. When you actually put them in hot water, they immediately turn bright green, like within 10 seconds. And they're delicious. Like people, I think a lot of times people weren't typically eating them that way, blanched. Mm-hmm. And then you can use them in all different kinds of cooking, you know. But they are delicious that way. And so I think if people like just try that out, it might open their eyes to, wow, there's a lot of possibilities here. So there's a small processor and farmer, actually, in Craig called Seagrove Kelp. And they've started a 1 pound frozen pack of ribbon kelp. And so I have not tried it yet, but I'm going to get some as soon as it's like they haven't even started orders yet. But they started saying, this, you know, stay tuned because we're going to be selling this stuff. So that'll be cool to experiment with and see just another. It's a less processed product form, but yeah.
To let people do their own experimentations maybe and see if they can mm-hmm. do some sort of a partnership with them. My assessment of it, having listened and done my research and, you know, listened to you, is there's a lot of new horizons coming with mariculture, and that's what makes it such an exciting industry. And I really appreciate you coming on Talk on the Rock to talk about it today and kind of let us know where things have gone and where they're hopefully going to go in the future with the burgeoning mariculture industry in the state. So thanks so much for spending some time with Talk on the Rock today.
You bet, you bet. And if you ever get a chance to try Kodiak, the Kodiak Brewery has a kelp beer even.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, the possibilities truly are endless.
Endless, limitless. Mm-hmm. The limit does not exist. Well, you have, for those listening, you've been listening to Talk on the Rock with Julie Decker from the Alaska Fisheries Development Foundation. You can find old episodes of Talk on the Rock at kstk.org, and we'll do our best to link some of those mariculture resources on the post for this episode if you want to learn more about those. So thanks for listening in. We'll take you back to our regular programming in just a bit.